This is Alex Medford from Denver, Colorado, coming to you from sunny Maui, Hawaii, and you're listening to the Pro Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, hockey fans from around the world. I am Richard Cote, the producer of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. It is the second line edition of the podcast, and you know what that means. It means we are all together. We are reunited. This is like the second week, second shift in a row. This line has not been separated. And you know what? I'm feeling really, really good about it. It feels good to have everybody back on the same line. No penalty kills, no shorthanded nonsense. It means I am joined by the publisher of ProHockeyNews.com, Lou Lafredo, out there in the Albuquerque area. Lou, how are things down there in the land of enchantment?
Unseasonably warm, but we are expecting some precipitation to flow in from the Sierras, I think, over the weekend. And as you can tell, we are in a 4-on-3 skating situation here tonight. I've got a friend perched on my shoulder. So, everything's doing well here in Albuquerque.
You know, cat on the shoulder, you know, good weather until the weekend. I think we're going to be getting a little bit of that as well up here in Denver. But a little bit further north of us, up there in the Edmonton area, we have our snarky Canadian, Jacob Doherty. Jacob, how are things up there north of the border?
I'm jealous I don't have a cat. Or a dog.
Are you going to be watching the Puppy Bowl this weekend?
Oh, yes, that's happening. Oh, God, I can't say the word. Thank you for reminding me. I almost forgot. I can't say the word like I did last year, or else I'll get in trouble. I've only been cited once. It was for that one word.
It's interesting because you can use the phrase Super Bowl if you're talking about it as an editorial. If you're referring to the game itself, you can use the term Super Bowl because that is the title of the game. If you're using it as a promotion, like, you know, place your bets for the big game, you can't use it unless you're an official sponsor of the game. So speaking weird. Of official sponsors, this episode of the Pro Hockey News Podcast is brought to you by My Custom Sports Chair. Head over to mycustomsportschair.com, enter in code PHN15 for 15% off your purchase. And you could get any kind of chair you want, any design, they will make it for you so you can relax while you watch, I don't know, the Puppy Bowl, because, you know, who doesn't want to watch the Puppy Bowl? All right. Before we get into our hockey news, before I hand it over to Bangers and Mash, because I know that's what all the listeners have come here for. I have a little bit of a story to share. It's not exactly a rant, but it's a first-time experience for me. I don't know if anybody outside the United States is familiar with a family entertainment restaurant known as Chuck E. Cheese. I have never been to one. Through my childhood, I lived probably an hour and a half away from one, so I never had a birthday party there. I never had a friend who had a birthday party there. I have never been to one until last weekend. Philip's friend, his best friend in school, had had his fifth birthday party over at Chuck E. Cheese, and it was something. I was prepared for the animatronic band. That's all gone. They don't have that anymore. So it's all video, and they have one costume mascot. It's I'm glad the kids like it, I guess. It was an experience. I'm glad I got to experience that because I feel like that's nowadays kind of the rite of passage for a parent. But I can't say I'm excited to go back to a place like that. If I were to, it would have to be drastically different. But just sharing that is a first for me. Not really looking forward to if I have to go back to one of those.
So Richard, before we move on, what you need to do is you have to watch John Oliver. Go to YouTube, catch John Oliver.
I watched that this week.
You did? Okay.
Oh yeah. his special on Chuck E. Cheese.
Yes.
Absolutely watched it. And Emily and I both watched it after we went, where we're like,
oh,
that okay. is spot on.
Really?
Bring back the 1970s Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah. We want that.
How many fights did you witness while you were there?
To be honest, we were like the only party there, because we were there at like 11 o'clock in the morning. So there were people filtering in by the time we were leaving. So not too many fights broke out, maybe one or two. But side note, again, before we get into Bangers and Mash.
Yep.
So my wife, Emily, she is terrified of clowns and costume mascots. She cannot deal with costume mascots. So I was on high Chucky alert the entire time we were there, because he was coming out to do a few things for the party. And Emily's like, if you see him, let me know. I'll be across the room. And that is exactly what happened. The minute she caught eyes with Chuck, she was across the room. It was fun. It was fun to watch at least that part. Yeah. All right. Listeners, I know this is why you're here. You're hearing the pipes. You're hearing the drums. It is time for Bangers and Mash. Lou, what do we have this week?
Oh, surprise, oh, surprise. Sheffield Steelers are still in the number one spot. They are still.
I was going to be shocked if they weren't.
Top perch in the EIHL standings, and only making a joke because the Steelers so far this season are 29-3-1 through 33 games, which is just a staggering record. I don't care what league you're in. 29-3-1 is just spectacular. So they're leading the EIHL ladder with 59 points, coming in at second place, closing in because it was 16 points last week.
Mm-hmm.
But a few of the teams have been making up games in hand and have in fact been picking up some points. But the Cardiff Devils won today over the Coventry Blaze 5-3. And have closed to within 12 points.
Wow.
The top spot in the EIHL. They have 47 points through 33 games. Guildford Flames, I've had a really good run of it over the last couple of weeks since we last met. They've closed in with 41 points. They've got a record of 17-9-7. So an awful lot of those points seven of those points are obviously coming in the overtime or shootout losses, skills competition losses. I refuse to call it shootout, just as a heads up.
Okay.
I am one of those that call it something else. Belfast Giants are coming in the fourth spot. They're holding that down after 34 games with 40 points. They're sitting at 18-12-4. They've not had a particularly good run of it this season. But most of the reason why they're in the fourth spot is those around them have had even less spectacular seasons. So Coventry Blaze, for one of them, they are 17-13-4. So there's an awful lot of losses, and most of those can be attributed to the Sheffield Steelers doling out losses like candy at a circus by those clowns. See how you put these things together?
It's coming like, around full circle.
Coming and putting a bow on it. But those are the standings for the top four. And as I said, Sheffield Steelers are just running away with the EIHL so far. They and the Guildford Flames have reached the finals of the Challenge Cup for this year, and that game is coming up in a couple of weeks, and I hope that we have a chance to talk about that the next time the second line meets and have a recording with David Grant and Mick Johnson. So back to you, Richard.
All right. Well, let's bring it back here to the North American continent. Let's take a look at the ECHL. Things have changed a little bit since the last time we took a look a couple weeks ago. I'll give you a quick rundown of the standings as we are here on Friday, February 9th. Let's take a look at the North Conference in the Eastern Division. First, we have the Adirondack Thunder in the number one spot with 66 points. Only a mere 16 points back is the Norfolk Admirals in that number two spot. the Newfoundland Growlers, you know, losing a little bit of ground, not doing so well in their last 10, 4-5-0-1 in the number three spot with 48 points, and the Worcester Railers in that number four spot with 45 points. Going over to the South Division, the Greensville Swamp Rabbits are in the number one spot with 66 points. You know, doing pretty darn well here as of late. The Jacksonville Icemen, 9-1-0-0 in their last 10, in the number two spot with 57 points. The South Carolina Stingrays, who I believe last time we talked were in that number two spot, have dropped to the number three spot with 56 points. And the Florida Everblades in that number four spot with 49 points. Going over to the Western Division, Western Conference in the Central Division. If I slow down, I can say it, I promise. The Toledo Walleye in the number one spot with 60 points. The Wheeling Nailers in the number two spot with 54 points. The Fort Wayne Comets in the number three spot with 52 points. And the Indy Fuel rounding out your top four with 50 points. In the Mountain Division, the Kansas City Mavericks, you know, they are they're still on top of this division. They seem to be pulling away just a little bit. 69 points leads that division. The Idaho Steelheads cooling off a little bit with 60 points. The Tulsa Oilers in that number three spot with 47 points. And the Utah Grizzlies finally cracking that top four. The Allen Americans dropping down Utah in that number four spot with 41 points. Lou, let's take a look at the Kansas City Mavericks. You know, Kansas City and Idaho had been head-to-head, you know, kind of hit-for-hit all season long. Now we're starting to see a little bit of separation between those two for that number one and number two spot. We got a 9-point separation. They are even in games played. Run me through the latest with the Mavericks. What has been gelling so well for them to be able to be making up that ground?
This one's easy. There's so many weeks that we've gone through this sort of thing and you struggle to find out where the strong points are or weaknesses. The Kansas City Mavericks, it's pretty straightforward. There are two players on the roster, both of them forwards, who have minus ratings. One is minus one, one is minus two. That's it. No one else has a minus on their plus minus. So that's number one. Obviously, playing terrific defense is the thing that you look at. Here's the other thing: about 75% of the skaters, forwards. Let's just leave it as the forwards are at least a point per game average for the season. But that discounts Patrick Curry, who's through 44 games so far this season, has picked up 20 goals and 51 points on the season. This guy is just tearing it up in the ECHL and leading the way. So Kansas City was neck and neck with Idaho, as you said earlier on in this season. They have not really changed. This club has been this good all season. In second place in is Max Andreev, who has 11 goals and 45 points through 34 games. So these are the two leaders, two of the point leaders. The next one is Noah Walker, who's got 43 points on 20 goals through 42 games. So you can see, you know, the headliners for the Mavs are really producing, but apparently. It is not being left to them to carry. They are not being asked to carry the load. You just go down the roster, and everyone, at least at the forward positions, has been picking up a point a game, and that's just stunning. You get down to the defense, and on the defensive side, everyone is on the plus, and they are also contributing goals. So they are a very difficult team to play against, is really what it comes down to. I think those are the two basic facts.
Well, I was looking at the top three players for Idaho as you were getting those stats off. The top three forwards for Idaho, very similar numbers as well, as you had mentioned. The top player for the Steelheads, Wade Murphy, is 43 games played, 22 goals, 52 points. Mm-hmm. Second most productive forward, Ty Pelton Bice, 36 games played, 11 goals, 43 points. And A.J. White, their third most productive forward, he's played 44 games, 15 goals, 40 points on the season. So, fairly similar for those top three forwards. I think it really comes down to their defense. Because if you're looking at the team stats as a whole, Idaho has scored 11 more goals on the season than Kansas City, but they have definitely given up they've given up 147 goals on the season compared to the Mavericks' 118.
Right.
They are definitely getting a lot of production from those forwards. My opinion is it's that defensive effort and keeping that puck out of the net that's been the big key.
Absolutely. And the Steelheads did go through a stretch of their 10 game stretches since probably 4 weeks ago have been typically under 500. So they were running up against, they lost a couple of times to Allen Americans. Utah clipped them a couple of times, and the Mavs also beat them over that 2 to 4 week stretch. So, right. The Mavericks are establishing themselves as the team to beat, I think, in the ECHL, because I don't think anyone in the Eastern Conference, can touch them right now. No. Adirondack has certainly been playing well. Greenville Swamp Rabbits, your favorite and mine.
Yep.
I need one of those. I need some sort of merch from Greenville because I just love that rabbit. The perennial favorites, as you are aware, South Carolina Stingrays, Florida Everblades have not had their usual season, and they're going to have to really rally, I think, to compete for the Kelly Cup this season.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah. They're definitely going to have to, to rally up, clean it up, trim it up. Maybe head over to our friends at manscaped.com. They could use our promo code manscaped.com/prohockeynews to save 20% off their purchase to trim things up, keep things tight, keep things moving as we move on down the season. Keep looking good with Manscaped. All right, let's take a look at the AHL. Was that too forced? That felt a little forced.
No, that was great.
Okay. Let's move over to the AHL, or as I like to call it every now and then, the American Hockey League. Let's take a look at the top four in each division. We'll take a look at the Atlantic Division first. The Hershey Bears remain on top of the division with 74 points. The Providence Bruins in that number two spot with 61 points. The Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins in that number three spot with 54 points. And the Hartford Wolfpack in that number four spot with 51 points. In the North Division, the Cleveland Monsters slowing down a bit, but maintaining that lead on the North Division with 54 points. Right behind them, the Syracuse Crunch with 53 points. Drops a bit when we get down to the number three spot with the Toronto Marlies and 46 points for them. The Rochester Americans in that number four spot also with 46 points. In the Central Division, we have the Milwaukee Admirals on top of that division. I believe for the first time this season, they have been playing really well, but I think this is the first time they've been able to take over the top spot in that division. 59 points for them. The Grand Rapids Griffins in that number two spot with 45 points. The Texas Stars, we're gonna come back to them in just a minute, falling quite a bit into the number three spot with 45 points. And the Rockford Ice Hogs, still staying in that top four. I love those Ice Hogs with 38 points. Now, take a look over at the Pacific Division. In my mind, this is probably the toughest division in the AHL this year. You have the Tucson Roadrunners in the top spot with 58 points. The Coachella Valley Firebirds in that number two spot with 58 points. The Calgary Wranglers in the number three spot, dropping a couple of spots to that number three spot with 52 points, and the Abbotsford Canucks in that number four spot with 51 points. Lou, let's go back to the Stars. This is a team who has been at the top or near the top of the division all season long. They've hit a pretty serious skid, going 2-8-0-0 in their last 10. Why all of a sudden are the Texas Stars just snake bit?
They ran into the Milwaukee Admirals is what happened to them. A couple of weekend sweeps along the way since the last time we all met. But Milwaukee Admirals have really, as the Milwaukee Admirals were heating up, they were running up against the Texas Stars, and the Stars mm-hmm. were just unable to keep up with them, especially last weekend where they were swept over that weekend set, and the games weren't close. So that's one of the issues. But by and large, I mean, from a season perspective, the Stars are the Texas Stars are fairly well equipped. I would suspect that they'll still make it to the playoffs. Their goaltending tandem of Matthew Murray and Rennie Pointer are the two goaltenders backstopping the Texas Stars so far this season. Both of them have pretty similar stats, 303 goals against average versus 3.17, and both of them are over 900 save percentage. But I think where you've got a problem here is that the defense has started to slack off a little bit, slump, while the offense has taken a hit. So where we talked about the Kansas City Mavericks as a team-wide effort in succeeding and doing really well, this is a team effort where that this slump is not unlike what the Los Angeles Kings are going through in the NHL, three mm-hmm. wins in their last 17 games. This is what the Texas Stars are up against. It's a malaise across the roster, and you know, as the trade deadline comes along in the NHL, it'd be interesting to see what impact it's going to have in Cedar Park.
Yeah, we'll be following that closely. I got a feeling that they got to get out of this slump here soon, but we'll keeping an eye on the Texas Stars and their parent club. In the NHL. Speaking of the NHL, we've had we're back in action after the All-Star game, and we'll get some reaction to that here in just a bit. But news to come down this week. We've been waiting to see what's going to happen with the five players who were part of the 2018 Team Canada sexual assault case. We finally have a little bit more information via press conference from the London, Ontario police. Listening to the press conference, pretty much all I got was there was some new evidence submitted that made them reopen the case. They wouldn't say whether that it was evidence that was missed or it's brand new evidence that's come forward. They were very reluctant to answer any questions about the investigation, which they should be. The last thing you want to do is compromise an investigation because some reporter is hounding you to get that information. And I, as a journalist, can understand that and respect that. But it's also extremely frustrating when there's been a years-long investigation and you can't get the information of, why this case was brought back open. It was considered closed at the point, but we do have to be very careful about how we go about getting this information and, how this can come back and, potentially hurt the victim in this case, information that might be able to identify the victim. And that's something that we just absolutely do not want to do. Jacob, I know you've been following this closely, and I'm sure you share in the frustration on the lack of information. Give me your takeaway about, what we've learned in the last week surrounding this case.
Well, we haven't really learned much outside of this isn't going to be a part of that initial settlement. And this is a criminal one, not a civil suit, like the which settlements can be agreed upon. This is a legal, a criminal suit, and at least we have the five players at this point. At mm-hmm. least we know who's being charged, rather than all those players on the roster who probably didn't do anything wrong, you know, having to avoid social media or getting occasionally called out for this situation when they were completely innocent and had nothing to do with it. And it was it obviously makes sense why they have to do it. They have to do their investigation, and we'll see. I know that they are aiming to have an expedited process. So I remember a lot of people were talking about how backed up the courts in Ontario are for this kind of criminal case. Generally, I guess because of the profile of this, they're going to try and speed it up. Don't know anything past that.
One thing that that I kind of took away from this, and I guess maybe a couple of things I took away from this. One, that there are three more players who are unnamed. They have not been charged yet, but police would not answer the question whether more charges could be coming and if those three players could be facing any more charges.
So that was actually announced initially. This entire thing started with the initial investigation into eight players.
Right.
They just, I guess, don't have the evidence for three.
Right. I mean, there was a question, you know, bluntly asked to the police department, you know, whether those three players are going to be facing charges or, you know, what the status is. The police department refused to comment. So what we know is, you know, those three players who, of course, have not been named because they haven't been charged, which is, you know, standard protocol.
They have been charged. Yeah. So. Yeah.
The three players?
No, the initial five.
Right. But the three players who haven't been named, they have not been charged. So they're not named yet. But the police department would not answer whether any charges could be coming forward to those three who are not named yet. So it sounds like those three are still involved, like still under investigation, but nothing formal has come forward as of yet. The second thing that you know caught my attention right off the bat during this press conference was that the police chief came out and just straightforward apologized to the victim that the investigation has taken this long. Not so much of an admission that something, you know, not right happened during the initial investigation, but I don't see a whole lot of that happen these days, that a public official like that will just come out and apologize for the entire department. And that one caught me off guard. I wasn't exactly expecting that, but I am so glad that he acknowledged that this is something that has not been done. Has not been given its due process, has not been expedited the way that it should, and it's been taking so long.
Yeah, I hope the victim also appreciates that as well. I can't imagine how just awful of a situation this has been for that individual.
Right. So as Jacob had mentioned, we're hoping that this is going to be an expedited process, that we will be learning more as the investigation continues, as, you know, the court proceedings happen, we will be learning more and more. But as of right now, we're pretty much with everybody else. We know who has been charged, but that's it. So formal charges earlier this week. We'll stay on top of this. We'll give you the latest as the details become available. All right. Who's ready for a little bit lighter topic? I am. I'm ready for a little bit lighter topic. Let's talk All-Star Game. I got a good feeling between all of us before we started recording. None of us really watched the All-Star Game. And you know what? We were on par with just about everybody else in the world. The ratings for this year's 2024 NHL All-Star Game, they were down this year compared to years prior, or at least compared to last year. Last year, the NHL All-Star Game averaged, I think, 1.4 million viewers. And this year it was down to 1.15 million viewers, even though it was on ABC. I think last year it was on TNT. But you know what? I'm going to stay with the majority of the people who do like it. I like the idea of it and I like how they do it, but for some reason, I just can't get that engaged to sit down and watch an All-Star game. Exhibition games are hard for me, you know, when they're pretty much meaningless. You know, great. I'm glad we're celebrating the best players in the league, but I don't know. I don't really need to see them face off if it's not going to, you know, really mean anything.
Right. So I'm going to jump in ahead of you, Jacob, on this one, because I've been giving this a lot of thought since we all met 2 weeks ago, and you had asked me, and I said I just had zero interest in the All-Star games. I have two things. One of them is directly related to what you just said, Richard. For instance, in baseball, the conference or league that wins the All-Star game is the home team for the World Series. So there is something at stake in Major League Baseball in a nine inning game.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And so we elect or position players in the NHL All-Star based on what they do in 5-on-5 situations. And then we proceed to put them into 3-on-3s. I'm sorry. It's just there's no correlation between regular season and the All-Star when you start doing that 3-on-3 stuff. So that's my take. Jacob?
Yeah, I do think they need to make it meaningful. I was actually thinking if they want to go with this captain format like they did this year, what if they have the winning team's captain choose where the next All-Star game is?
Yeah, pretty.
And if it's two in a row, they get to choose.
Yeah.
But they can't be like the same one 2 years in a row. I mean,
right. I mean, yeah, pretty low stakes, pretty easy to implement. But I mean, maybe it's they're given a list because I don't know, like if the captain wins is like, oh, Arizona's going to get it. Well, where are we going to play in Arizona? The mullet? No, we're not going to do that. I think you have to give them a list of places of here are like the next three places we're thinking of having the All-Star game. You get to pick which one of those three. I think that something more like that would be easier to implement for the NHL. I would love to see a return of the North American versus the world and make that even if it's just for pride. Like I could get behind a Team North America.
I'm sure Jacob could too.
I mean, it would be. Well, I don't know, because I mean, you got, you know, Finnish players, Swedish players, they're pretty darn good.
McDavid, Crosby, Matthews, McKinnon, who else even at this point?
Like,
yeah. McCarr. That would be an absolute sloshing.
You know, yeah, probably, but I would love to see that. I like maybe not just like every single year, but like let's mix things up. The 3-on-3 format I liked when they initially did it. It was like, this is something new. I like it. I'll tune in and watch it. And I did for the first couple of years. Now it's kind of, you know, lost its novelty and I'm kind of out of it, but I'm definitely more invested in, you know, the night before when they do the skills competition, and especially this year when it was redone and officially Connor McDavid approved for the skills competition, even though I feel like it was a little unfair to let him compete in something that he approved, because he just went ahead and just dominated it. But, you know, hooray, he gets a million bucks. But I would rather the All-Star Weekend just be that. Like, let's just put them together and just show off their skills. Like, I'll tune in for that. Or, hey, let's take NHL All-Stars 3-on-3 versus the PWHL All-Stars, because that game was great. I stuck around after the skills competition, or after the the team draft. I stuck around after that and watched the 3-on-3. That was phenomenal. Savannah Harmon with a hat trick. Yes, please. That was awesome. Let's do the NHL versus PWHL. Sure. Like, for bragging rights, but, you know, something different. You need to get my attention. Right now, the NHL is not doing that with the 3-on-3 tournament format, but.
You know. Did you see the clip where Michael Bublé was,
oh yeah, the mushrooms. Yeah, yeah.
That was very funny. I quite enjoyed it.
newfound respect for Michael Bublé.
Bubbly. Oh yeah. Anyway, NHL, I know you're listening to this podcast because, you know, this is the greatest podcast on earth, as far as I'm concerned. Let's mix up that All-Star game. Let's get some new formats in there. Let's not do it the same every year, and let's see how things go. Bring back North America versus the world. I would love to see that. All right. You know what? Let's talk injury before we get moving on. Earlier this week, Mikhail Sergachev, out for the season. Lou, I think you had some thoughts on this before we started recording. Kind of a hard hit that leads to the injury. What do you make of this?
It sort of depended on the angle of the video. And when the angle of the video was behind Sergachev as he was striding towards the boards, he seemed to catch an edge on his left leg, on his left skate, excuse me. And you just saw his lower leg knee down contort, I think is the best way to put it. As we all know now, he fractured fibula and tibia in the left leg. He had surgery yesterday to stabilize the injury. What I found interesting was the social media response seemed to be pinning the blame for the injury on Sergachev's target along the boards, and that was Alexi Lafreniere from the Rangers. Discounting my feelings about the Rangers, I just thought that Sergachev was targeting Lafreniere's numbers. His numbers were clear as Sergachev started his strides on the outside of the circle on the right side and came in. Lafreniere did see him and adjusted his position a bit. But then when you see the hit from the side, it's clear that something catches Sergachev's skate. It's not Lafreniere throwing a check or doing something. He's avoiding the hit, if anything. He's not leaning into Sergachev. And listen, I feel badly for this guy. He had missed 17 games dating back to, I think, mid-December for a lower body injury. Missed 17 games, and this was his first icing since that injury. And here he is, he's out indefinitely. So we don't know just how bad this fracture is, except that when you consider that the surgery was to stabilize, so it's not fixed yet. There are other surgeries apparently in his future, probably pins and whatever. This was just to simply stabilize the injury. I feel terribly for him. Why do we have to go to, why do we have to start assigning blame for something like this right out of the gate? And, you know, that was my take on it.
Jacob, you've seen the clip. There are people saying it was because Lafreniere was throwing a reverse hit on Sergachev. Your opinion, what was he avoiding a hit, or was he Lafreniere trying to actively make a hit?
I don't know. I think, it was clearly caught an edge or something, but it was unintentional. It was very clearly unintentional. It's hockey. Things move fairly quick. It happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Things can change on a dime in this league. So it just happens to, happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. How did you view it, Richard?
looking from the stands, there's definitely intentional contact right along the boards. Whether that's Lafreniere trying to get out of the way or anticipating a hit, there's definitely some intentional contact made between the two. I would not blame this injury on Lafreniere. Whether he was, pulling what they call a reverse hit, or whether he was, trying to get out of the way and makes contact, or whether he was, getting, trying to tie up Sergachev. I don't know. It looks like he was, playing the puck, trying to protect himself from getting thrown into the boards, which probably would have happened here. Just seeing the clip again, I do see Lafreniere kind of wind up with his shoulder, but that's not a hit to try and injure. That's nothing dirty there. He's anticipating contact. He's making a hockey play.
I thought he was protecting his shoulder, to be honest, the way he brings his left arm up.
It's probably like an oh no. And then.
Right. And look, by rule, a charge is more than three strides.
Mm-hmm.
And Sergachev started that rush to the board well beyond the right circle. And, let's not forget where this is all coming from. I feel badly for him, but, player safety has not taken this up either. So they have ruled it a clean hit. And so as much as I love my Twitter, I knock it off, people.
Yeah.
No, enough already.
Yeah. Part of it looks like he's lowering the shoulder to either absorb or to make contact. Nothing here tells me that he's intentionally. Oh yeah. Skates get locked up. He's not trying to hurt the guy, obviously. No. It's nothing dirty. It was a hockey play. Yeah.
Twitter. Listen, we had that happen in our league, Richard.
Oh yeah.
That exact same level of contact. And I'm sorry, I cannot remember his name, but it was a game that I was in. I was the captain of the team he was playing against, and his leg was, it was a compound fracture for him.
Oof.
And it was an innocent, it could not have been any more innocent. A play, he skated to the backboards, and next thing you know, he's on the ice. It's brutal.
It is. Twitter at its finest, or X, or whatever they're calling it these days, at its finest. As we know, we're recording this on February 9th, Friday, February 9th. We are less than a month away from the NHL trade deadline, which got me thinking, as it always does, as we start getting closer and closer to the trade deadline, Well, who are the buyers? Who are the sellers? And I think this year, to me, because I've been able to come up with some, it's a lot more obvious than prior seasons. But I figured maybe the three of us, we just share our ideas of, you know, who are the top buyers, who are the top sellers, you know, who needs to start getting their club ready for the playoffs, and who needs to start thinking about the future of their club if their club has a future. Let's start with the buyers. Let's start top buyers. It could be either the Eastern Conference, Western Conference. Jacob, I want to start with you. Who is your top buyer in the NHL as we come to the trade deadline?
I don't know if it's going to be the top buyer, but I think one of the most significant buyers is going to be Detroit. Mm-hmm. They have cap space and they have a team that can go a very long ways. If they get hot at the right time, they might need to upgrade goaltending. They have draft picks to spare. They have a lot of people on expiring contracts, but the catch is, they'll generally have to go money in, money out. But they can absorb a bit more money than other teams. And the problem with Detroit right now is a lot of their defensemen, if they want to try to move them, they're on no movement or no trade clauses.
Yeah.
So that would be tricky, but.
All right. Lou, yeah. In the NHL, who is your top buyer?
I am wondering about the Vancouver Canucks. They had that trade where they picked up Elias Lindholm for Kuzmenko, and they just negotiated, wasn't it, before seeing the second year of his deal? I'm still puzzled by that trade. And yet, Kuzmenko has done a very good job with Calgary. He's scored in both games that he's iced for them so far, both of them wins. It suggests to me that Vancouver is looking to nail down top spot in the West and solidify the unit going into the Stanley Cup. So I've got Vancouver. Something is brewing in Vancouver.
Well, okay. I'm curious, do you think that they have the draft capital, or they're willing to trade their draft capital that they have left because they don't have their first or second?
Right.
And their third round pick is conditional in that Kuzmenko trade. So
they are all in this season.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are they willing to trade away the future? The Abbotsford Canucks are a decent team. They play well. There's certainly some talent there that could be moved as a prospect. Why did they get rid of Kuzmenko is still bothering me. It's scratching at the back of my brain. Can't figure out why. I sort of feel like Calgary got rid of a problem that the Canucks took over, and are they going to move? Is he now trade bait? Basically, that's mine. Vancouver Canucks, because I think they are all in this season to win it. They've got a great team. They're just making it better. They are tied for the top spot for the President's Trophy. They have 73 points. They're tied with Boston Bruins.
Yep. Richard, my top buyer, I'm going to go with the reigning Eastern Conference champion, Florida Panthers. They're in a good position right now to make another deep playoff push. They have some really good pieces locked up, and they have a little bit like a hair of cap space, but compared to the other teams who are in serious competition right now, they've got a ton of cap space. They got about $1.2 million of projected cap space. Not a lot, but enough to play with. They got some movable pieces. The only thing they don't really have is those draft picks to be able to throw in. They're missing their first rounds of this year and next year, their second round of this year. So the highest they could really do that's really, you know, effective would be a second round of next year, which they have one of those. Outside of that, not a ton to play with, but really only four players, if you want to count Bobrovsky, with no movement clauses. Everybody else, very movable. You have Sam Reinhart. You're not going to get rid of him, but he's done. Exactly. He's done at the end of this season, at least with his contract. But you have quite a few other players down the list who are either going to be UFAs or RFAs by the end of the season. You know, movable pieces to clear up some cap space. So to me, Florida, and Jacob had mentioned it earlier, Detroit was my other one, but I think Florida right now is a team who would really like to make a good push if they can find that right piece. And they have most of the capability to do it. All right, let's talk about sellers, because you can't talk about buyers without talking about sellers. I'm going to start with Lou this time.
Okay.
Who is the top seller in your mind, the top seller in the NHL this year?
This one's going to surprise you.
Is it?
Yes. Tampa Bay Lightning.
Oh, it did surprise
me. We've got 3.5 weeks. March 8th is the trade deadline, March 8th. So we've got about 3.5 weeks. Well, yeah, 3.5 weeks. And so the next three weeks are going to tell the difference between Tampa making the playoffs or not. They lost to the Rangers coming out of the All-Star break 2-1 in overtime on Monday night, and then lost last night 6-2 to the Islanders. And last night's game with the Islanders was just non-competitive. And to me, the Sergachev loss in the issue with Tampa is that their bottom defensemen are not carrying the weight. Now they've just lost Sergachev, and who's going to be called up out of Syracuse to take that slot, and who's going to move into his slot and then fill in on the back on the bottom pair. Vasilevsky has been less than ideal since he came back. And I just, except for Kucherov, I don't see much to convince me that they're going to make the playoffs. And so if you're asking for a prognostication, for me, it's Tampa Bay Lightning.
Okay. All right, Jacob.
See, I'm torn between two teams right now.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Columbus.
Okay.
Because they have basically nobody signed.
Right.
But it's true. Next year. They can do almost anything. And the team is just dreadful. They just...
Yes.
They just don't... They don't have the excuse that they had in previous years where everyone was injured all the entire season, basically. Like, their IR was longer than the roster for most part last season. This year, they just don't have an excuse. I want to... Yeah, I'll go with Columbus. Yeah.
Okay.
Who's your second choice?
Minnesota.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
There are rumblings that a certain Flower might want out of there.
I hope not.
I hope he gets to go to a contender. That would be my stipulation.
He seems happy though.
Yeah.
Has the guy ever not seemed happy? Like, maybe his last few years in Pittsburgh, but he's the most likable guy in the NHL, and you just, I don't know, you feel for him. And I would like to see him on a contender. My top seller. I'm also torn here, but I am going to go with the Ottawa Senators. They are going to be my top seller. They have pieces that can be moved, and they are desperate to look to the future. Like, I don't think they really care what they get. They're looking more for draft picks than they are for actual bodies to put there on the ice. And they're not really looking to save a whole lot of money because, I guess they could drop a little bit in their cap room, but they're loaded with draft picks this year, but you know, you could start picking up some for 2025. And this is a club who desperately needs to rebuild. They desperately need some pieces, and they really need to just tear apart that front office because it's been dreadful.
I like both of your picks on the seller side. Interesting.
I mean, if not that, if they're not going to be the top seller, my other pick was going to be the Anaheim Ducks. That is another franchise that just needs to implode right now and build from the ground up.
I think they're working on that.
Yeah. Actually, the guy that I would like to see moved to a contender is John Gibson.
Yeah.
He has toiled long enough with a subpar team in front of him.
And there are plenty of contenders who either need a starter or, you know, I would say backup, but a second decent starter to throw in there. I mean, let's follow the Boston Bruins model here. You got Ullmark and Swayman, two extremely talented goalies. That's what you need to compete in the playoffs anymore. You need two solid goalies to go in.
Back there last year.
You know what? Let's not talk about that.
You know, Jacob, you beat me to it. Just a little poke.
I don't remember beyond October. Okay. You know, everything started in October. Who cares? Okay. So there are our top buyers and sellers. If you have any thoughts about who your top buyer or seller is, you know, share them with us on the social platform known as X. And speaking of sharing with us, Jacob, I believe we have some picks to make this week.
Oh, yes, we do. Yes, and actually
some results from last time, if you would like to share with us.
Yes. Last time I went 5-2, Richard went 4-3, and Lou had a bad time with a 1-6 record.
That's two, you know, that's two in a row for me that were bad.
The time before you went 2-3. And I went 3-2. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize I had done that well. 1-5.
No, 1-6.
1-6.
But alas, we move on, and hopefully you can climb back because Richard is running away.
I've given up.
You know, I need to carry some of this over to the first line because over there, I am one game behind Adam. I am trying my darndest to catch him, and I just can't seem to do it.
You just want that. You just want that trophy.
I want the bear.
Yep.
Adam, I'm coming for the bear.
Okay. First game to kick it off. We got the Calgary Flames at the New York Islanders. Calgary on a 3-game winning streak. New York on a 2-game winning streak and looking good with Patrick Waugh. Richard, as the leader, who do you got?
I was surprised to see Patrick Waugh come back into the NHL as a coach after his departure from Colorado. That was definitely not pretty. Flames 3 in a row, but they're the Flames. I'm going to go with the Islanders.
Okay. Rich. Or Lou, sorry.
I'm going to take the Flames because Markstrom is playing very well in net right now.
Yeah, everyone always says Markstrom's bad, Markstrom's bad. No, Markstrom's a really good
goalie. Just a team, like John Gibson, And I know people will take exception to this one. Jake Allen, wherever he plays, the offense disappears. That poor guy needs a decent team in front of him. But Markstrom is playing very well right now. He's the reason they're winning.
Second Jake Allen left St. Louis, they win a cup. Real. He's cursed. I feel so bad for him. He's such a nice guy. I'm going to go with the Islanders. I like me some Patrick Waugh.
Okay.
Next game, we got the Colorado Avalanche and the Florida Panthers. Lou, let's start with you.
Wow, this is a tough one because Colorado has gone cold. They are 0-2-1 in their last three. Panthers are playing well. I'm going to take the Panthers on home ice.
Richard?
I'm going to take the Panthers as well. Colorado they have not been able to put it together recently. And as Lou had mentioned, you know, the Panthers are playing really good at home. So, yeah, give me the home team.
Yeah, I think a nice sunny trip to Florida would do the Avs some good. And Nathan MacKinnon this season has been insane.
Oh, so, but that point streak is broken.
He'll get another one up soon enough. Just needs a few games.
Right.
So I'm taking the Avs. Next game, the Arizona Coyotes at the Nashville Predators. Richard.
Arizona at Nashville. Earlier in the season, I'd have been like, this is going to be a sneaky good game, but Arizona's kind of fallen off the face of the earth. They don't have the power of the mullet anymore. And away from the mullet, it's even worse. 8-13-3 on the road. Give me Nashville.
Okay. Lou?
This is a tough game. You choose them by comparable records. Isn't that right?
Correct.
Nashville is, Nashville is far too inconsistent. Connor Ingram, I think I'll have a better game. Give me the Coyotes.
Okay. I'm going to agree. I like the Coyotes. Don't know why. The home record for Nashville also doesn't really give me much confidence. It's very rare. Well, it's not rare. It's far and few between that you see a team with a winning record have a 500 home record. That's usually not the case. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I'm going to go Arizona. Next game, Edmonton at the LA Kings. Hey, Richard, do you want to attempt fate again?
Although that winning streak did end, just not when I said it was going to. This one, let's see. LA, not so great at home. And Edmonton, I mean, their stats are all skewed from that 16-game win streak. I'm going to go with the Oilers. They're going to start up another win streak. I don't think it's going to be 16 games, but it'll be close to double digits.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a tough call. Hiller is now the interim head coach.
Mm-hmm.
He was an assistant there. Question is whether or not they're going to change any systems after Todd McClellan got fired. The Kings lost their mojo from the first half of the first quarter of the season. Tough call. Give me the Kings.
Okay.
Just I was 1-6 last week. Who cares what I pick?
I think I saw that they won like 3 of their last 17 games or
right,
some absurd stat. LA, I mean. So I think Edmonton has a pretty safe bet. I was trying to goat Richard into picking LA.
But it looked like you did the spreadsheet, right? Oh, wait, no, it's Edmonton. Never mind.
Yep, I'm picking the Oilers. They're never going to lose again, except for that one time that they did against Vegas. Game was rigged.
Until the playoffs.
Yeah. Too much celebration. Anyways.
Yeah.
Last game of the week, St. Louis at Buffalo. Lou, I'm going to start.
St. Louis. Buffalo is an absolute mess. I don't know what it is in Buffalo. They cannot seem to generate a longer win streak than two or three games. It's dysfunctional. You want to, you know, they would have been my second choice for sellers.
I mean, what can they even sell? They signed everyone to such
sick contracts. You know, these guys have one good year, and we just shovel money at them, and they go paws up on you.
Yeah, this is why bridge contracts are a thing.
Yes,
that's going to be not a fun time for them. Richard.
Oh, let's see. I mean, St. Louis 11-12-1 on the road, but still better than Buffalo at 11-13-1 at home. Not by much, but I will go St. Louis.
Yeah. St. Louis's offense is really not great this season.
You don't need that against Buffalo. Offense, you don't need it. They'll put it in for you.
I'm going to pick St. Louis. I really want to pick Buffalo. I really want to pick Buffalo there. But actually, I'm going to pick Buffalo. I got to get back some of this, this space between us in the standings. So we'll see if that works out. It probably won't. I picked Buffalo. Must be in the air. If you'd like to follow along, please use the hashtag PHNPicks and submit what your picks are going to be for this week.
And all right. Thank you, Jacob. That takes us to our parting thoughts. Lou, what's on your mind this week?
I want to thank Joe Bartnick, one of our writers, covers the Kings for us, as well as his commentary over the course of every season. He has been out doing his comedy tours, and he's been sporting his PHN toque for the last 2 weeks on social media. So thanks to Joe Bartnick.
All right, Jacob.
I have successfully kidnapped a family friend's dog.
No.
Kidding. I finally have access to a dog at any time I want, and I'm really happy about it. So I will share pics with you guys after.
Okay. All right. My parting thought this week. Listeners, I saw it. I saw it in all of its silvery glory here at the Park Meadows Mall in Lone Tree, Colorado, sitting in the middle of a store. Was the Tesla Cybertruck. I stood right next to it, tried to open the door. They wouldn't let me open the door. It was all locked up, but I didn't really feel like getting a sales associate to let me go inside of it. It's as weird in person as it is in pictures. It's big, I'll tell you that. It is a very large vehicle. But I've been waiting to see one in person because I didn't want to judge it completely on the pictures. I still don't like it. It's, I don't care what its capabilities are, whether they're phenomenal or not, whether it's as indestructible as they say it is, which probably isn't. It doesn't look like a vehicle I would ever want to drive. Maybe if I pulled up to a test drive and I had 10 minutes to kill, I'd do it, but no, it's not for me. I'll stick with a more traditional looking vehicle. That one is just beyond hideous.
Either one of you buy a Tesla truck, I'm not doing the podcast anymore. I don't know if that's a threat or a promise, but that is just awful.
Oh, it's hideous. When it came out, I was like, all right, this looks like a 4-year-old trying to draw a DeLorean, and it looks even worse.
One thing I've wondered, can you actually paint them?
You can get them wrapped because they come in stainless steel. But you can get them wrapped in certain colors. I've seen people do it in black. I've seen them purple. I've seen them green.
Yeah, but doesn't the wrap just like get absolutely decimated if you like go off road at all or have like gravel down or anything? It just gets chipped off.
Yeah, like any sort of
especially on like paint film. Steel.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I've never seen one, taken off road that's had that rap. You know, they've only been on the market for a little while, but yeah, no, still not for me. If I were to go a truck, electric truck, I'd, you know, either go with the Rivian or the F-150 Lightning. Cause you know, they look a little bit more like a traditional vehicle or something I'm used to. You know, maybe in the future when we have all those brain implants, I might be coerced into getting a Cybertruck, but
bye.
Exactly. when Elon Musk's other side hobby of Neuralink tells me to go buy one of his vehicles.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Again, not sponsored by Tesla. If we were, you would know it. Thanks to all of our actual sponsors, My Custom Sports Chair, the Chicago Wolves Merchandise Store, Manscaped, and LDE Affinity Jewelry. Thanks to Jacob and Lou for joining me on this week's edition of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. And thank you, listeners, for making us a part of your routine. For Jacob Doherty and for Lou Lafredo, listeners, I will see you all next week.